when people say, what's it like to be an entrepreneur? Like, what's the day-to-day like? And that's what it comes down to. It's a series of local maximums and local minimums, right? The minimums are out there. I'd like to say that we've been 100% successful at everything we've done. That's a lie, right? Very few companies could ever say that, if any.
Hey there. I'm Zach Deshane with the WTL Group at UBS Financial Services, and welcome to The Trenches. The world is chock full of how-I-got-rich narratives that in hindsight, well, they always sound perfect. Our goal on this show is to provide you with stories applicable to your own situation from people who have gotten over the hump in building something great. We're talking with entrepreneurs and founders to focus in on that specific moment where they knew they had created something special, and we're bringing those moments straight to you. So on with me from the middle of Chinatown today is James Smits. James is the COO and co-founder of Andrina. Andrina provides high-speed internet at the fraction of the cost by cutting out the middleman. And it's $25 a month for high speed there, right?
Did I hear that right? Fees, did I read that right? No contract, month to month. Yeah, it's a pretty good deal.
Wow. We'll get into how you're able to do that in a second, but you know, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me. Excited.
Yeah. So let's talk a bit about what Andrina does and why did you decide to start it up?
Yeah. So, you know, like Zach said, Andrina does high-speed internet for $25 a month. How we can do that is rather than using telephone poles, laid cable, we do things wirelessly. So in any given geography, we partner with real estate. We use their rooftops to move internet around. At the same time, we service their tenants. So we work with them, bring our internet to their tenants, and we can also use those rooftops to cover the surrounding area, not just other buildings, but adjacent apartment buildings, even a single family home. So, you know, today we're live in Princeton, New Jersey, and Hoboken, New Jersey. We're about to launch in two more geographies, Newark, New Jersey, and Williamsburg in Brooklyn, which we're very excited about in kind of Q1 of 2020. But yeah, that's what we're up to. You know, it's me and my co-founder, first started the company. I must say that Neil is really the brains behind all this. Neil Chatterjee, my co-founder and CEO.
So that makes you the good looks son, I guess.
I wouldn't even give me that sort of credit. I'm the guy who wears a lot of hats. Yeah, I like taking out the trash, the metaphorical trash. But yeah, so we got, you know, Neil and I teamed up in 20, where are we now? We're in 2019 and 2016.
Okay.
2016 is when I first, when Neil first started floating the idea around. I joined full time at the end of 2017. You know, Neil and I first met way back when, you know, before this, I started working in venture capital. I was judging a bunch of hackathons, and Neil was the guy always winning those hackathons. He then, you know, he went to school with me, ended up leaving school early to join one of my portfolio companies as VP engineering. And when he left that company to found Andrina, originally I was the first investor before then joining him full time. So that's kind of our story. You know, we've known each other now going on 7-8 years through a variety of contexts, but now principally as co-founders of Andrina.
Yeah, and it seems you had the luxury of working with him before actually having to work with him, right? So
yeah, but it's interesting. You know, it's like when you're an investor in a company, and I was very lucky to invest in a whole range of companies, probably, you know, 50, 60 companies in a range of industries, solving really hard problems, doing really exciting things. But when you're an investor, you kind of exist at this 10,000 foot level, right? You meet with them on a quarterly basis, maybe even on a weekly basis, but you're only ever kind of sitting in. You're never the one doing. And so, you know, coming out of venture, that's something where I was really hungry for, is I wanted to be on the ground doing the hard work. So, you know, at the same time, I knew Neil, but, you know, I'd worked with him vaguely in the sense that I was an investor in a company he worked at. I was an investor in the company he founded before then joining as his co-founder. But, you know, you never really know what it's like to work with someone until you're doing it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, luckily for Neil and myself, it worked out well. Otherwise, that'd be a catastrophe, but for, you know, a variety of people involved. But our skill sets complement one another especially well. So I think that, you know, we turned out very lucky in that sense.
Yeah, definitely. And we see this a lot with the people on the show. We're just having conversations that you're basically married to your partners, more or less.
Neil's on my favorites in my iPhone. You know, it's like him, my mom, my girlfriend. You know, there you have it. It's
maybe
circle
or
of
maybe
trust.
Not in that order, huh?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, who knows?
You don't have to disclose. That's fine. So you're in the venture world, you said. You've invested in 60 to 80 companies, which means you probably saw thousands, right? What about Andreena stood out for you as the one you really wanted to swing at?
Yeah, you know, look, first and foremost, it comes down to team. And, you know, at that point, it was Neil, right? His sole founder, someone I'd, you know, interacted with in a variety of capacities, someone who just kind of like exceedingly intelligent. So, you know, traditionally in like early stage venture, not to simplify the whole thing, but to simplify the whole thing, you're betting on horses to a certain degree, right? There are oftentimes many companies operating in the same markets and they're competing against one another. And what wins out is not necessarily like, you know, maybe it's sometimes idea based, but it's really execution based. And that execution is related to the person who's at the head of the table, right? And that was Neil. And I was very impressed with Neil in that capacity. You know, beyond that, it's a very exciting market, right? And, you know, I don't have to sit here and say this, but, you know, it's good to point out, you know, 18 years running, internet service providers have been the most hated industry in the United States.
I believe it.
Exactly, right? No one likes their provider, right? And so this is a really big, attractive problem. Of course, as soon as you like look under the hood, it's a very complex problem and a very difficult one to solve. But that also appeals to me. You know, generally, I view myself as a risk taker. I like betting on myself and the people around me. The problem had a lot of, you know, it was very attractive in that sense. I also thought that the solution that, you know, Neil had initially developed and that we started really executing on was a very compelling one as well as compared to the industry. It's something that people were excited by when you start talking to customers about what we do. You know, the price point is one thing, but then how we actually get to that price point is another. And I think consumers were intrigued by there's an alternative out there. Personally, I have one option in my apartment building, right? And it's Spectrum. And today I'm a Spectrum customer, but hopefully one day I'm an Andreena customer. I can pay myself. But, you know, that's who I'm stuck with. So I think people are really excited about the idea of having another option.
Yeah, the concept of natural monopolies is always a tough pill for the consumer to swallow, right?
And, you know, look, they're not technically monopolies or anything like that, but they've built up a strong infrastructure that has let them take advantage of that, right? Where they can be one or two, maximum three providers in a given geography, right? They've had control of these markets for forever, whether they're the same brand or through consolidation or, you know, when Time Warner Cable wants to become Spectrum, they get these natural monopolies, which, you know, they can really take advantage of and they get strong subscriber bases from. But our goal is to go in and take that market from them. And, you know, it's something that, you know, Dick Parsons, who's one of our investors, former CEO of Time Warner Cable, now with Imagination Capital, is one of our investors. You know, he says, you know, they always thought that in any given geography, a new provider could come in and get 10, 15% of that market. And that's kind of our base level goal. Obviously, we want to exceed that. But we also take that viewpoint that we can go and take this market share by being an alternative, by having it a more attractive price point, by being someone you actually want, you have an affinity for. Mm-hmm. Imagine if you actually wanted to, you know, sign up for an ISP versus being like, well, this is the one I'm stuck with. Oh, well. So, you know, we have a lot of things going for us from a, you know, technology perspective, from a branding perspective, marketing perspective that we can really take advantage of in that pursuit of gaining market share in our geographies.
It sort of sounds to me, and not to paint you into a corner, but you're almost like the T-Mobile of ISPs, if you will.
No, I think there's certainly that. Like T-Mobile is a very interesting case study in terms of brand marketing. They obviously have a CEO who's quite aggressive in an interesting way on Twitter, on social media, in the press, right? Obviously, they're going through, you know, kind of potential merger with Sprint, which, you know, kind of changes a lot of function in the market. What's interesting about T-Mobile is that they don't have a home internet offering today, just focused on cell. Some people have also compared us to, you know, Cricket Wireless or something like that. You know, there's a bit of a trap if you become the quote unquote like cheap internet.
Yep.
But you know, what if we could be both in a lower cost internet and provide you a better quality of service, both from the actual internet that you're using, but also, you know, that if you pick up a phone, you can get someone, or that you can text a number and that you'll have a response in less than 2 minutes, right? We also view this as how can we be the proactive ISP, right? The internet service provider. I'll use ISP a lot, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think people by this time people get what that is.
I apologize, viewers, but you know,
listeners.
So, yeah, sorry, listeners. Thank God you're not viewing. But, you know, what if you can be the proactive one where something goes wrong and before even the customer knows about that, you're telling them, hey, things are going wrong, we're working on it, right? So how can we use technology and be smart about doing that? So we already have a lot of this internal tracking, you know, over time as we evolve as more and more of a, you know, consumer-centric product, where it's not just the internet you're using, but you have your Andrina app that relates to that. How can we really keep the customer at heart in everything we do? Yeah. Which I think is something that if you look around around the industry, more and more people, they have gotten away from that. I think that's what, you know, perhaps you see some people really recentering on that, but I think that's a big opportunity for us as well.
So you covered the why there pretty well, I think. Again, price point's compelling, but it's not just about price, it's about service as well. Can we talk about the how without getting too much into this is how an internet network works? If you go on the Andrina website, you're talking about tier two providers. And when I first read it in, I was like, sounds almost like you're stealing cable from hospitals and selling it via Wi-Fi routers. But to be clear, not that at all.
No, not
that at all. So that's on me, not on you. But so let's talk about what is a tier two operator, how you guys operate. I think the concept of if your neighbor's on Andrina, that sort of helps you out as well, growing the network. Talk a bit about the technical model.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it's good to talk about the tiers. So there are different types of internet providers. They're the tier one internet providers. Those are the people that take that lay undersea cable, that move internet from the United States to England or wherever, right? Then there are tier two providers. People then take that cable from whatever that big data center is and move it around regionally. So, for example, bringing it from New York City to Princeton, New Jersey. And then tier three providers are people that actually then take that internet from that, you know, even more local place and bring it into your home. Verizon, Comcast, Spectrum, Andrina, we're tier three providers.
Okay, so just tier is not to delineate in terms of
we're number one in everyone's hearts.
Right, of course. It's more a manner of delineating throughput, if you will.
How internet moves around, right? And the different levels of operators that control the cables that ultimately move internet around.
Right. You're not using the B leagues of internet. It's just how connected are you to.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, one of the we work with a major internet provider who has customers that include Comcast and Verizon, but also, you know, the major law firm in your town, the major hospital, a hospital, a law firm, a university, they'll work directly with a tier two because they just need that amount of internet. They don't need just, you know, 100 megabits per second. But, you know, we work with the same people that sell internet to the other tier three providers out there.
Gotcha. Okay. And then you're with the tier two providers there. And what's the concept then of if your neighbor's in Andrina, you're helping spread the network? How does that work?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's all about how do we go from the tier two provider to the tier three provider? And that's where the kind of wireless technology really takes over as making this whole delivery more efficient. So rather than using telephone poles and laid cable, we use rooftops that beam internet around a given geography, going building to building and also building to direct to customer. You know, what's interesting is that, you know, by customer joining our network, they can sometimes actually expand the service area that we can cover. If you think wirelessly, to really oversimplify, you know, kind of the math behind it and the science behind it, is it works into like some version of line of sight, right? So if I can see your building or your apartment or your home from a rooftop next to us or next to you, then we can cover you. But what if, you know, the person on the other side of the apartment building doesn't have line of sight to one of our rooftops? Well, you know, by someone else joining in your building, you can actually expand that coverage area.
You're sort of like a Wi-Fi signal booster in your basement.
Yeah, kind of. Or it's like, you know, if you're like wirelessly daisy chaining a bunch of surge protectors together.
Okay.
Now, we don't take that too far. We'd never go more than like, you know, one or two hops on that, just because you start getting into precarious situations, right? But it's interesting. I think, you know, there's this idea behind community-powered internet that a lot of our customers, a lot of people out there are excited by, right? How can we band together to replace the incumbents? And that ultimately comes back to, you know, a lot of what, you know, motivated the original research and discovery around kind of what we do at Andrina is by that idea. How do we band together to replace an internet provider or to become our own internet provider? And you quickly realize that if you start doing things actually by laying cable and going into every home, it's really expensive, right? It costs, costs Verizon Fios on average about like $1,500. We've done some math. We think it's around $1,500 to wire up a new home.
A house. Not an apartment building, just a house.
A house. An apartment building is way more expensive.
Okay.
And it's not because of the actual hardware. Fiber cable, relatively inexpensive. What's expensive about it is the labor to actually do that, especially if this is not a new building. If this is an existing home or an existing apartment building, actually then getting a cable into every apartment is very expensive. And so when you start doing the math and you realize, well, I'm never going to be able to replicate that. What are my other options out there? And you start, you know, what about this wireless technology? It's been pioneered in kind of, you know, originally in more rural areas in the United States. It's now starting to come into more suburban and urban areas. But again, they have this kind of last mile issue, right? To actually wire up a customer, you know, traditionally it's been, let's put it in, you know, a home signs up for company X and we're a wireless internet provider. We send a team of two to their house. They put an antenna and a mast on top of their house. They have to cable from that into the home. Then they have a control panel that then cables to an access point, then creates that local hotspot. Again, laborious, some level of expense behind the hardware as well. What if we can package all of that into a router that we can ship to your home that you plug into power and you're up and running with internet in less than 5 minutes? That's a lot of, you know, the motivation behind what we do is how can we remove the labor aspect of this by replacing that with some level of technology, right? So, you know, if you're in one of the apartment buildings that we service, there's no in-home hardware. It's just a device that we've installed in your hallway. On move-in day, you go to andrina.com, click see if you're covered, follow the steps, and you're up and running with internet in less than 5 minutes. Never had to call us, never had to schedule an installation appointment. It just works. And then, you know, but what if you're in the surrounding area? What if you're in the single family home that's in our coverage map? Well, you still have to, right now you still have to schedule an installation appointment. We send someone to your home, but it takes 10, 15 minutes to get this device up and running. And that's it. Just plugs into power, doesn't need coax. That's it. Longer term, we want to be able to send that device to your home. And it's like installing a Google Chromecast or something like that. So it's, you know, how can we take advantage of this wireless technology, but then also the software layer on top of that to empower our customers? And if we can empower them in a way that is, you know, totally seamless and easy and all that fun stuff, we can bring you this internet at $25 a month because we've removed a bunch of the labor aspect associated with that. And I think that's how can we actually make this direct-to-consumer internet, not you sign up, 3 weeks later the Comcast guy shows, or, you know, whoever shows up, you know, takes, you know, he shows up 2 hours late, he or she, they show up 2 hours late. It takes an hour to install. You have to call them back in 3 weeks because something goes wrong. We want to get rid of that. It's a horrible customer experience, right? What if you can design this from the ground up with the customer in mind? And I think that's where a lot of this motivation comes from. Now, that's my diatribe right there. That's my talking for, you know, 5-10 minutes. But that's so much at the core of what we're trying to do. So how can we make this a seamless customer experience?
Yeah, if you give me a minute, I'll move the soapbox off to one side here. But no, and the whole concept of technology is going to replace people, not necessarily what you're about, but it just seems to sort of come out in the wash that, hey, we can do better than be manual with a lot of these things.
Absolutely. I'm not saying that we're going to like fully replace our workforce. But what that means is we can also spend money in other places, right? We can have a much more attentive and present customer support or customer success, as we really like to think of it, right? It's empowering our customers. It's being present, right? As soon as someone signs up, they get an email from me, you know, listing out, you know, what's, here's your Wi-Fi network, here's the referral code, all that. We'll cancel your provider for you, your existing provider for you, and then they have a direct line to me, right? Now, longer term, they might not necessarily have the direct line to me, it'll be someone else, but we want that. That ethos comes from the top down, and we want that to be kind of internalized across the company. And so, you know, that's kind of a lot of our thinking is, you know, let's automate the process of actually delivering internet to you. You make it as seamless, just as your computer connects to a Wi-Fi network when you open it, why can't your router connect to some greater internet, right? Or, you know, you be able to connect to some greater internet without, you know, the rigmarole. But we want to then make that customer experience seamless along the entire course of your history of being an Andrina customer.
So how much of this is also, you know, everybody's talking about cord cutting these days and bundles and debundling, whatever term you want to put on, right? I don't need to get my cable from the same person I get my internet if I get cable at all. But if you look at sort of the business models right now for the existing providers, that doesn't always make sense for me as a consumer to do so, right? You've just doubled my internet bill because I'm not buying cable from you. Well, that's sort of a tough, I guess I'll take the cable then, fine. But at this pricing and this structure, if this becomes more pervasive, then you've really created an internet of choice, at least by price point, if not by service, for the millennial zeitgeist of unbundling, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think there's one thing to appeal on price. That's great. But something I learned in venture, and whether this is right or wrong is a whole other conversation, but it's difficult to compete on price, right? If that is purely what you're going after, like, good luck to you. It's going to be hard, though. So I think that's a catch. It'll bring people in and interest them in what we do, but what will really keep customers as loyal customers, as excited customers, as people who have high net promoter score for us, people who want to tell their friends about us, is if we can provide that perfect customer experience as well. And that starts from the first time they hear about us to when they sign up, to the installation if necessary, to whatever ongoing communication they have with the company. So I think, you know, unbundling is certainly one thing, and, you know, people are looking more and more to cord cut. That's the trend. All the data is telling us that people are cord cutting. Have people already cord cutted, but they're looking for that excuse to cord cut too, right? So we've had customers who've been looking for that excuse, and we are that excuse, right? Our price point is such that now they do the math, and when they're also still signing up for Fubo TV or YouTube TV at $45-$50 a month, they're still saving 50% on their bill, right? And if that's real money, right? I'd save customers thousands of dollars a year, right? Just individual customers, right? Which is something that's great. They can spend that on something else. They can save that money. They can invest with UBS, right?
All right. Yeah.
There's lots of opportunity out there, but that's something that's really exciting as well. And I especially see that as exciting with a lot of the small business partners that we work with. People use our internet to run their business, right? It's not just for browsing. It's for their point of sale. It's for their phone. It's the things that they need on a day-to-day basis to run their business. But we see very frequently in the contracts for businesses that they really get gouged. It's because, you know, look, there's a certain level of white glove service involved in working with businesses, especially when it runs your business. You kind of need it to work 100% of the time, right? But, or 99.9%, right? But if, you know, our businesses, we save them, you know, probably hundreds of dollars each on a given month, right? And that really adds up for someone. They can hire a new employee. They can, you know, pay that month's rent. It's important. And it's exciting to see, and it's exciting to work with those sorts of partners.
Yeah, we, back to the personal side, we always sort of preach in terms of budget, like what's your controllable expenses and try to manage that. Yeah. So I know I always look at my quote unquote fixed expenses, but, you know, maybe they're a little more variable than we all would like them.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, you know, it's not necessarily gonna, it can still be $1,000, a couple $1,000s. It's real money that can be put to something. It's not necessarily life changing, right. But it's certainly something that, what if you had that variable? Today, you haven't had that variable, right? It's assumed as this fixed item. It's like, well, that's my option, so that's what I'm paying. And when they increase it on me, well, I guess I'm out of luck. That's what it is. What if you actually had a variable in there where you're going from $75 a month to $25 a month?
It's exciting stuff. Let's pivot to James as co-founder and your journey with Andreina here. And maybe you can answer a few questions for Neil if you want.
Yeah.
But
I'm sorry, Neil.
So you outlined a couple markets you're in. You're still obviously looking to grow. At what point, and maybe you've had this, maybe you haven't, but at what point would you look at Andreina and say, we're a success?
It's an interesting question. There are many layers to it, right? So there's the one thing, success is providing a great customer experience, right, to an ever-growing customer base. There's the other success is moving into new geographies and expanding the team. You know, a lot of people, because, you know, we're a venture-backed company, and, you know, full disclosure, we've raised outside money, right? Success for our investors is a return on their dollar. You know, as a steward of their capital, I have a fiduciary duty to honor that as well. So some level of success is selling the business or going public. And all realistic worlds, it's going to be selling the company versus going public, just given the, you know, the numbers in the market. But yeah, so a lot of different measures of that. There's certainly those things that we hold ourselves to on a month-to-month basis from a KPI perspective. What we're tracking really is customers, churn, so the people that are leaving our service, revenue, growth in each individual market is important to us, not just growing in one market across the board. Those are things that we're looking at month over month, but, you know, success to us is a moving target, and we're just focused on building as big a business as quickly as we can.
What about for James Smits yourself instead
of me personally?
As a team and fiduciary of investor capital. Yeah. What about you? You go home, you turn the lights off at night, put your head down. What gives you the warm and fuzzies about Andreina? Or what would if you haven't gotten there yet?
No, it's certainly every day is a new challenge when starting a company. And no day is like the others. And it's kind of classic adage and it's totally cliche, but it's true. You know, for me, it's building a business, empowering the people that we hire who are smarter than me. And that's my goal in hiring, is to always find smarter people, empowering them to use their skills to build the business together. So I get really excited by the team clicking, right? We've just doubled the headcount in the last like 4 or 5 months, and the team is really working right now. You can see just the gears turning perfectly, and that's really exciting to me. So we've done a good job to date of empowering those people. You know, again, you know, customers getting excited about what we do is awesome. Success in terms of keeping the lights on is always important as well, right? So, you know, being able to close another round of venture financing was a really exciting moment.
Would you say that at this moment, success is almost binary? Lights are on, lights are off?
Well, so I think of it this way. Building a company is a series of local maximum and local minimums. And you want the local maximums, when added up, you want everything to be looking positive, right? So ultimately, you're going to have bad days, and you're going to have good days. I can't say that every day is the best day ever, right? Because it's not true. But at the end of the month, end of the year, whatever it is, you want that trend line to be up and to the right, because mm-hmm. that means you're doing something right. So you want the local maximums to be greater than the local minimums. And if you can keep that running, even if you, I don't know what your, you know, what your time value is, but if every week you're thinking about that, every month, whatever it might be, if you can keep hitting that, you're doing something right. And so that's, you know, when people say, what's it like to be an entrepreneur? Like, what's the day-to-day like? And that's what it comes down to. It's a series of local maximums and local minimums, right? The minimums are out there. You know, I'd like to say that we've been 100% successful at everything we've done. That's a lie, right? Very few companies could ever say that, if any, right? Even Uber has had their downside. Right?
Yeah, we've heard.
Exactly, right? So I think, you know, it's can you keep moving forward knowing that you're always going to have downs, but you're always going to have ups? And the goal is, together as a team, can we have more ups than we have downs? So far, so good. We're still here. The lights are still on, right? Mm-hmm. But I think that's kind of the constant pursuit. And that's why, you know, celebrating success, again, a cliche, but I think it's really important too. Building a cohesive environment in the workplace is really important. I think you can celebrate your successes, understand your failures pretty well.
Yeah, and it sounds to me like you have a very, very well-grounded approach to running a business, growing a business, being an entrepreneur. And I got to assume that at least in part that's informed by your background as inventor work. Any specific learnings or takeaways aside from find a good horse? that you can share?
Yeah, I mean, look, from a angel investing perspective, from a, like, what did I learn from venture?
Whatever you've learned from previous life that you're applying right here in Andreina.
Yeah. So again, you know, I had the opportunity to invest in a whole range of businesses, very early stage businesses, pre-seed, seed, some Series A, across a few different funds. I've seen a lot of failure, ultimately, is what that comes down to, right? I'd love to say that I'm the world's best investor and I've never had a failure, but even the world's best investor has failures. It just happens, right? It's actually very difficult to predict success. You know, some of the most exciting companies we invested in were the quickest to fail. So sure, there's the betting on horses, but also realize that failure is just part of the game, right? If someone's starting an investment portfolio tomorrow, whether they want to be hyper-concentrated in Series A and up companies, or they're doing seed investing, you got to hit a certain end to actually see some level of success. Now, take this on the flip side, now my N is equal to one, right? I've invested in one company in the sense that I'm a co-founder of it. So, you know, how do we then mitigate failure while optimizing for success becomes what you're battling on a day-to-day basis. One option, raise venture capital, right? We have cash in the bank so that we have time. But that's ultimately what raising venture gives you, is time to execute upon a vision that you have put forth in that pitch deck. That vision changes on a daily basis. It's not like you have some tome that you're held to, but now you have that opportunity. And so then how do you hire the right people who optimize for success? How do you make the right decisions along the way? Again, failure is going to happen, but just be cognizant of that fact is really important. I'd say that's probably one of the biggest things that I realized. The other thing, I've alluded to this a couple of times, is just hiring people smarter than you is the number one, maybe the number one thing you can do to optimize for success, right? I'm not the smartest person in the room, not the dumbest person in the room. I've always thought. And I kind of got that from school, as perhaps Zach can attest to, is what it's like. You know, you're surrounded by everyone who's a valedictorian, right? I was no valedictorian in high school, but that's another conversation. But everyone's a valedictorian. There can only be one valedictorian at Princeton, right? But, you know, ultimately, surround yourself with people smarter than you, and that, you know, lifts all tides together. So I think that's a really important part of it as well. You know, so far, so good on the team front. I'm really excited about who we have, people with better industry experience than I'll ever have, but that's the name of the game as well.
Yeah, and I think it, you've sort of mentioned this before, but you're not inherently a tech guy, right? So you're
by no means, right? Yeah, yeah. So I majored in economics with a certificate in environmental studies. I wrote my thesis on water trading markets in the Western United States. I'm good at Excel, not the best. I can't do an LBO today, but I'm not a computer science major by any means. I don't know any programming languages. I'll be the first person to say that I am, you know, not technically illiterate, but I'm not the right person to be solving your technical issues outside of, you know, power cycle your device.
The old unplug and plug it back in.
It works 50% of the time. You'd be surprised.
And I think that that sort of out there, everybody who says to themselves, I want to start a company, I want to be an entrepreneur, I think they believe in two gating factors that don't seem to actually be the case. One is I have to have a better idea than anybody else. And as you talked about at the beginning, it's not the idea, it's the execution.
Absolutely.
Who's willing to put in the hours, put in the slog, understand the local minimums, if you will. Yeah. And then two, it's, hey, I want to start a software company or anything relatively technical. Obviously, you're not a software company, but...
We're a hardware company, we're a software company.
Everybody's a software company, right?
Yeah. What our customers interact with is software.
Okay, yeah. Okay. Didn't want to paint you into that corner.
No, it's fine. Trades at better multiples anyway.
But, you know, people saying, look, I don't have any specific industry experience, therefore I'm out of whatever idea I might have. And I think that it's really becoming eye-opening, the more conversations that I have with entrepreneurs, the more that both of those perceived gating factors seem to be not actually gating factors whatsoever.
Well, at heart, we're a technology company, right? Both hardware and software. That's quite complex because we deal on a networking level and we're dealing at kind of the forefront of a lot of these technologies. So that's ultimately really important to who we are and what we do. But it's also, you know, look, that's why I am so lucky to have Neil as a co-founder, right? Why I'm so lucky to have Nick DeVoe, our CTO, Nathan Lamb, our, you know, software engineer on our team. It's about finding the right people to do the right things. Sure, I could turn around and learn to code and, you know, be somewhat proficient in Python or whatever you need in 6 months, right? 3 months, 6 months. Take a boot camp or something like that. But am I the right person to be doing that? Probably not.
And that's the economics in you comparative advantage, right?
Exactly, right? Look, there's a fancy term that I don't remember from school. But, you know, what I am good at is getting things done. I like existing on an execution basis, very on the ground, right? That's where I think Neil and I complement each other very well. I mean, Neil is very execution-oriented as well, but he also is more of, you know, quote-unquote visionary, has that lofty vision for the company. And then it's about how do we translate that into what we're doing on a monthly, quarterly basis? How do we hit the milestones we need to hit as a company so that in 12 to 18 months we can be successful in our next fundraise? Right? So we can keep the lights on. So it's about how do you translate this vision into something that you can actually do in a short burst of time. And that's one of our advantages as a startup is that we can iterate very rapidly, right? You know, that will forever be one of our strengths until we can't, and we'll probably be too late by then, right? So it's about keeping, you know, big focus on that. So, you know, I can empower people on the technical side. I can hopefully point people in the right direction, at least from a customer perspective. I interact with a lot with our customers, so I hear their experiences and we can translate that into improvements. But ultimately, you know, I am not the right person to be existing on the technical side. But that said, I wouldn't say it's easy to find a co-founder who has that technical skill or who is someone like Anil who, you know, deep, deep computer science, electrical engineering background. And that's something I saw a lot in venture when you meet a lot of people in venture. It's kind of like what you do. You're just networking constantly. And you meet a lot of people who are like, I have a great idea. I just don't have anyone to build it. And that's part of the advantage I had is coming from ventures, I interact with a lot of people who do build things. And so I had, you know, it's not like I had a pick of a litter of co-founders, but I interacted with some people and kicked ideas around over periods of time and, you know, stumbled into the right situation today with Neil. So it's difficult finding co-founders. It's not something that presents itself easily. Sometimes there's someone you've known for 8 years. Sometimes it's someone you met yesterday, right? I've seen both scenarios work, but it's difficult, again, to predict success around that.
Definitely, definitely. So let's look to the future here. You mentioned a couple times continuing funding rounds is obviously a goal, but what's next for you guys? Geographically speaking, you outlined a couple of cities, all seem to be relatively trendy, New York locale.
Yeah, it's interesting. So, you know, we go after these, you know, quote unquote, and we mean nothing by this, but quote unquote secondary geographies, right?
Okay.
So we're not in Manhattan.
I won't tell Princeton you said that.
Exactly, right? I love Princeton. Born, raised, educated, living, working, all that fun stuff, right? Love the place to death. Seen it from too many angles. But, you know, especially beyond Princeton, when you think about the markets that we're in today and the markets that we're moving into. So we're in Hoboken today. We're launching in Newark and in Williamsburg in Brooklyn. You can start seeing this is the surrounding area of the island of Manhattan, right? And I think, you know, a lot of people, when they start a company, they want to go after the big lofty prize. But I think something that we've realized is that there's big lofty prizes everywhere. And you can have 15, 20, 50% market share in Newark, and that's hundreds of thousands of customers.
Yeah, it's definitely not winner take all the way your business model is.
Absolutely. And it's, you know, ultimately, look, there's still going to be dozens of internet providers across the United States. There are probably hundreds if you add up every, like, smaller ISP out there. But in the markets that we're in, how can we compete with Verizon, with Comcast, with Optimum, some of the, you know, obviously major incumbents out there, but how can we be the second or third provider in a building or second or third provider in a geography and rapidly take over market share? So our big goal, you know, is kind of looking towards 2020 is how we're thinking is, you know, about, you know, we're launching in Newark and Brooklyn. We'll have a couple more geographies to add to that list, certainly, you know, probably midway through 2020, if not, you know, earlier than that. But how can we then land and expand as rapidly as possible? So not just working with the one major building, but now you're working with 20 properties in a geography. With those 20 properties in a geography, you can cover the entire area. So how do you go from a coverage map that's in the thousands to the hundreds of thousands is a big thing for us, because we know that when we're in a coverage map that we get a percentage of that, a very strong percentage of that, very rapidly. And so now it's just about that land and expand as much as possible. So that's kind of, if you look where we've staffed up, it's sales, selling into properties, so not just rooftop access, but then, you know, accessing their tenants, residents, but also then marketing, so then covering that surrounding area. Also construction, right? We are at heart, we are an infrastructure company. We do lightweight infrastructure. It's not like we're putting up, you know, massive towers or building massive buildings. But at the end of the day, construction is core to what we do in the sense we're putting masts up on rooftops, we're wiring inside of buildings. It's important to be able to execute rapidly as well.
No, exciting plans for sure. Can't wait for you guys to get out to Long Island so I can tap in.
It's a good geo for us, for sure.
Yeah, a lot of people out there. A lot of internet.
Absolutely.
To be had. Well, so if people want to find out more, where can they find you guys?
Yeah, we're on the interwebs. We're on the internet at Andrena.com, Andrena.com. For folks wondering what the name means, it's the genus of worker bee. If you look at our logo, it is honeycomb, and that's where that all comes from. The light bulbs just went off. But beyond that, you know, we're on social. I think all of our things are Andrena_Wi-Fi. Go to our website. If you want to get your property up and running, we have, you know, andrena.com/property, I believe. You can drop the info of your landlord, or if you're the landlord, come on by.
Great stuff. Appreciate your time today. That's James Smits, co-founder and COO of Andrena. Thanks
Perfect.
A lot.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Cheers.
Great.
Hey, it's Zach again. Thanks for joining us here today. At the WTL Group, we work with entrepreneurs and successful families to help them achieve their financial goals and define their legacies. If this sounds like you or someone you know, message me on LinkedIn or shoot us an email at WTLgroup@ubs.com. This episode was part of a multi-episode opening drive. You can find the other episodes on Spotify or they're up on our website, www.ubs.com/team/WTL Group. We also have bios and a couple pictures up there of the team, so you get to know us a little better. If you like what you heard on the show, feel free to email us and let us know. And if you didn't, well, hey, we're always looking to improve, so we'd like to hear your thoughts anyway. hit me up again on LinkedIn or shoot us an email. Thanks for listening today. Have a great one.